it might be quite a while before Will Wade fans of LSU basketball see him back on the sideline. We'll give you the very latest. The Saints like their kicker a lot. More on free agency to come. And collegiate admissions, movie stars, the FBI. Sounds like a made-for-TV thriller. Today, Wednesday, March 13th, 2019.
Giannis backs it out on Shaq Diallo. Snell's had a good game. Giannis goes middle. Finger roll it good with a left hand. What long arms you have, young man. 111 to 98 bucks. Giannis up to 20.
Porter goes flying to the rim. Stolen by LeBron. LeBron on a clear out to Hart. Hart alley-oop off the board.
Embiid with the defense, the rebound, the outlet to Simmons. Ben looking for Joe, lobs it to him. Embiid gets it, tumbles hard down low left, made it. And Simmons and Embiid celebrating.
And a great good afternoon, and welcome. It is Wednesday, March 13th, the year 2019. Odell Beckham Jr. joins up with Jarvis Landry and Baker Mayfield. Nick Chubb and the Cleveland Browns are now a relevant football team. Meanwhile, the New York Giants are an expansion team with a 38-year-old quarterback. Or from Gotham to Cleveland, the mistake by the lake, no longer. All eyes on the Cleveland Browns. Good afternoon and welcome, everyone. My main man, CD, producer extraordinaire in the master control suite in the 237 roof studios on the campus of Delta Media, KLWB 103.7, the game, yours truly, Studio 1A. We begin with the very latest on LSU basketball. According to The Advocate, who had a phone interview with Joe Oliva and others today, as Joe Oliva is in Nashville in meetings with the SEC basketball tournament, apparently Will Wade won't return to the Tigers bench until he sits down to answer questions from university administrators about reported FBI wiretaps capturing Wade talking to a federally indicted hoops middleman about recruiting. According to The Advocate, Wade's attorney wrote LSU on Tuesday in a letter that the coach would talk about allegations, but once and only until the pending federal criminal investigation into corruption in college basketball concludes. The hearing is set for April 22nd. So that appears to make Wade's return anytime this season unlikely, no matter how deep of a run the ninth-ranked LSU Tiger basketball team makes in the upcoming NCAA tournament, unless Will Wade decides to reverse course, given that the defense attorneys are expected to subpoena Wade to testify at the federal criminal trial, as I said, that's scheduled to start April 22nd. That is well after the championship game. Athletic Director Joe Oliva and other LSU officials made it clear Wade could return this season if he changes his mind, agrees to a meeting, provides an explanation for his reported comments on the FBI wiretaps, and denies wrongdoing. Quote, if he, Will Wade, decides to come in and talk and is persuasive, then Joe Oliva and the president are going to be faced with the decision as to whether to reinstate him. This quote from Tom Skinner, LSU's general counsel and vice president for legal affairs. But we're not there yet. The advocate reached out for Will Wade's attorney and wasn't able to reach him. Meanwhile, Javonte Smart has traveled with LSU to Nashville for their tournament. And according to LSU, he could return to the Tigers team as soon as Friday, depending upon the results of an ongoing internal investigation expected to wrap up in the coming days. So we'll see. Scott, according to LSU, they have already questioned Javonte Smart. They've already questioned his mother, Melinda, about the reported wiretaps and any potential violations of NCAA rules, which strictly forbid payments to players or their families. Skinner, the LSU general counsel, said NCAA investigators participated in those interviews. So you can see that LSU is doing everything in their part to cooperate with the NCAA to put a good foot forward in their mind for the future. Now, LSU also identified two other people who might be in the unnamed handler referenced in the wiretap calls, and both of them agreed to speak with the university. I have no idea what that is. Skinner told the advocate today, "We hope to be done today or tomorrow." The story goes on. Wade initially agreed to talk to Oliva last Thursday night, hours after the two news outlets reported the wiretaps. Well, I have sources that tell me that LSU set the meeting. They wanted F. King Alexander there. They wanted other top university brass and attorneys and all that. NCAA investigators, the whole nine yards. Wade's attorney later canceled that Friday meeting, and he was indefinitely suspended that day because this is what Oliva told the advocate in an editorial board meeting today, which included Skinner, the attorney, Senior Associate Athletic Director Robert Munson, and Jason Droddy, F. King Alexander's chief of staff. So here we are. Here we are. And if Will Wade decides to adhere to his legal counsel, he's not saying anything. He's not saying anything. There are some out there that say Joe Oliva should make a stand and he should say, "Doggone it, I want Will Wade back. And if you're not going to hire him back, fire me." Well, that's easy for people to say. Joe Oliva makes a pretty darn good income. Pretty darn good income. So that's kind of ridiculous as far as I am concerned along those lines. Look, I'm a big fan of Will Wade. I am. I think he's a terrific coach. But if he broke the rules, then he has to suffer the consequences. If he didn't, and he is exonerated from all this, then LSU has themselves a problem because Will Wade's going to sue them. And if I'm Javonte Smart and I'm not reinstated this week to play, I am lawyering up, and I'm going to sue LSU too. I told you. Now, what's your grounds? What are your grounds for keeping me out? So we'll see how this all unfolds. But as of right here, right now, there is no Will Wade on the sideline. Oliva said he hopes Wade will eventually be cleared of any NCAA violations. But of course, but Wade's refusal to even discuss the latest reported wiretaps with university officials broke his contract and therefore the suspension. Hey, why didn't Oliva and Will Wade just meet? Why didn't they just talk? Get it out there. Then Oliva could go back to his bosses and they could figure all this out. Anyway, Scott Rabelais of The Advocate, we are efforting to get him on the program. He had to wait till all the content was out there, and so we're trying to get him in the second hour and to get his explanation on all of this and where he sees all of this going. So stay tuned on that. Still to come, the New Orleans Saints, Will Lutz. Boy, they took a gamble on him, a leap of faith, and did he ever deliver? 80% field goal accuracy as a New Orleans Saint. He got rewarded. We'll talk about the Saints and free agency next with NOLA.com, the Times-Picayune's Jeff Duncan. We're just getting rolling. Happy hump day to you and yours. We'll be right back. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. It is that city. Let's find out how excited the Who Dat Nation is. Jeff Duncan, NOLA.com, the Times-Picayune, kind enough to join us. Jeff, how are you, my friend?
Jordy, I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing terrific. So, you know, you win some, you lose some. Mark Ingram, now a Baltimore Raven. Did it come down to guaranteed money? Because he didn't get that much more of an offer from the Ravens. Did the agent kind of overshoot his mark? What do you think?
Yeah, it looks that way. It looks to me like they were expecting a larger offer from the Saints, and when the Saints kind of elected to go ahead and pull the trigger with Latavius Murray, it really left them without a lot of options on the open market. Things kind of dried up pretty quick, and they had to take they got more money out of Baltimore, but I think Mark Ingram would tell you it was a disappointing day for him.
I think so as well. You like Murray as a running back? Kind of fills a niche, doesn't he?
I think he's okay. I think he fills a hole in their roster, but I don't think they're done addressing the running back position. And I don't mean strictly in free agency. I wouldn't be surprised if they drafted a running back in a later rounds or looked at one in undrafted free agency. I really don't think it's going to have a huge effect on this team. I know Mark Ingram's a very good player, former Heisman Trophy winner, has been to a few Pro Bowls, but I really believe that, in the end, it's going to be negligible, the loss. I mean, Alvin Kamara is the clear lead back for the New Orleans Saints. I mean, he showed that last year once Ingram came back. He's going to get 70% of the snaps anyway, so we're talking about maybe 10 to 12 touches a game, and I think they can, spread that around to these other backs. I really don't think it's going to be quite as big a loss as I think a lot of Saints fans are thinking. They've shown in the past, Jordy, they can replace perimeter players. I mean, replaced Darren Sproles, Reggie Bush, Jimmy Graham, Brandon Cooks. I mean, it goes on and on. They just tailor the offense to the different strengths of their skill position players, and they'll just probably spend a little more time getting the ball to some other guys than they would the other back that's in the game when Kamara's not in.
What do you say to all those people that question Drew Brees and his contract and the possibility of restructuring it? How do you answer those people?
Well, I don't understand why they think he should restructure. I mean, he's clearly the best player on the team. He's worth every penny. I'd say he's worth more than what he's paid. He's basically playing at an elite quarterback price. That's what you pay for elite quarterbacks like Drew Brees. Everything that he puts in during the work week, everything that goes into how responsible he is for this offense, he touches the ball every play on offense, and I think is the number one reason why they rank annually in the top five. So it's not Drew Brees. I've told people this in the past. It's not Drew Brees' contract that's out of whack. It's some of the other ones on the roster that add up and leave them with no room. A Cameron Meredith that's making over $6 million a year and is not even playing – Kurt Coleman, who's counting against the cap, it was a swing and miss in free agency. You're paying almost $10 million to Andres Pete, and he's probably your fifth best lineman. Those things are where you need to look for cap savings, not in the best player on the team who earns all of his $25 million.
Okay. Will Lutz has certainly earned his contract, hasn't he? That was such a position that was in flux. But Will Lutz comes in and, 87% field goal accuracy in his time with the Saints, and Sean Payton took a gamble on him, and now he's been rewarded. That's deserving, I believe.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they've solidified the place-kicking game in New Orleans. It's the best it's been in a long time, and he teams with Thomas Morstead to give them just a superior kicking game. Definitely one of the better moves of Sean Payton's tenure. I mean, you'd have to say, I mean, he took a big risk on him. He even told Will Lutz, he told Kai Forbath, that's who it was, that he released a veteran, Kai Forbath, and was telling him when he released him that he knew that he might be making a huge mistake in his career by doing this, but he's going to roll the dice, and that's classic River Oak gambler Sean Payton. It paid off. I mean, they were patient with him, and he's turned into, one of the best kickers in the league.
What else do you think is on the horizon for the Saints? It looks like the Oakland Raiders got another wide receiver. It looks like Jordy Nelson's tenure there is gone. The Saints need wide receiver help, or is it Dez Bryant that they want back? Tight end, pass rusher. What do you think they do free agency-wise from here?
Well, I think they're going to really take their time, target a few veterans. I think they're interested in Ziggy Ansah, the defensive end from Detroit, who's visiting Buffalo. I think he's going to visit the Saints. I think he'd be a great addition. I think they need some pass rush help. They need help on defense. I think defensive tackle, with the uncertainty of Sheldon Rankins, when he's going to return from that torn Achilles, the fact that you got David Onyemata staring at potential four-game suspension, they're going to need some help at defensive tackle. I don't think it's a huge, amber alert pressing need to find a defensive tackle, so I think they can afford to wait and wait the market out a little bit. I mean, this team's returning, depending on how you look at it, Jordy, they return 18 to 20 starters from the team that was in the NFC Championship game and one bad call away from going to the Super Bowl. Most of their roster is young and talented. They don't have a lot of huge needs. I know people get caught up in free agency, and it's exciting, and it's kind of a Christmas for football fans, but look at the New England Patriots. I mean, they haven't agreed to terms with anybody. Last year, they didn't sign hardly anybody. They signed one player in free agency, lost a ton of guys in free agency, and they won the AFC East again and went to the Super Bowl and won it. So, I think sometimes we get caught up in what the other teams are doing, and the Saints are in so much better shape than most teams. They can afford to sit back and let this market play out. I do think they need to add a veteran tight end to the mix, and I think they will at some point, but I think these guys are going to be more secondary market players. It might take a week or two for them to fill some of those roles.
Okay. Boy, in the past, they were very quick to jump in, and there were so many examples where they failed. I love the cautionary way that they're doing this thing and the prudent way that they're doing it, and we'll see what happens come draft time as well. Now, we only have about a minute and a half, 2 minutes to go. I got to ask your impressions on your thoughts on LSU basketball, the Will Wade situation. Did LSU do the right thing? Just give me your general thoughts.
Well, I'll be heading up tomorrow to Nashville for the SEC tournament. I think it's going to be a great tournament.
Okay.
And I think LSU's got a great chance to win it, even despite the adversity.
Me too.
That's a very, very talented team. I think they're going to have everybody back. I would expect they'll have Javonte Smart back at some point. And they're good, Jordy. I know you've seen them a bunch. They've got every facet of the game. The thing I like best about them is their versatility. They've got bigs. They've got the dynamic point guard in Waters. They've got some shooters outside with, Skylar Mays and Graves. And then I like the forwards. I like Emmett Williams. I like Darius Days. They get the size to them. They pound the glass. They just got a lot of ways to beat you. I think they're going to be a tough out, but I think at some point that emotional tank might run dry. I mean, they're obviously very motivated right now with an us-against-the-world mentality. And then, let me get back to your original question. Yes, I do think they did the right thing. I think it's clear that they've got some major issues with the basketball program, and you need to be proactive on that. And I think Joe Oliva and F. King Alexander did the right thing in making a proactive move, and I think that will help them down the road, because I don't think this thing's going away. I think the NCAA is going to be involved, and I think it could be bad news for LSU basketball.
There it is. Spoken accurately and affirmatively, as always. Hey, man, safe travels to Nashville, man. That is going to be a really good tournament. LSU gets to play either one of the teams that beat them in the regular season, either Arkansas or Florida. So that would be an interesting first game for the Tigers, and we'll see how they fare. But safe travels. Always appreciate the time, and thanks for the update on the Saints, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, anytime, Jordy. Thanks for having me on, buddy. Take care.
How about it? You're the best. All right, man. You take care. Jeff Duncan, good friend of the program, award-winning writer, NOLA.com, The Times Picayune. We'll take a timeout here. When we come back, Cody Worsham will join us. Wednesdays with Worsham, and we'll talk LSU basketball. We'll talk some LSU spring football. Joe Burrow, what a difference a year makes, right? We'll explain next.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Holtberg Show on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the app.
Hey, we welcome you back. It's time for another edition of Wednesdays with Worsham, Cody Worsham, the digital media director for LSU, kind enough to join us. Tournament time, my friend. Always a great time. How are you?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm awesome. What's been on your plate lately, man? What you been up to?
Fortunately, this is a busy time of year, so obviously a lot going on with basketball, but a little spring football as well. Looking forward to getting out to the box this weekend for some baseball, too, so kind of dipping my toes in a little bit of everything right now.
You're involved with basketball. What kind of vibe do you get from this team? They've left and departed for Nashville. What sense do you have of where their minds are right here, right now?
Yeah, I think they're pretty focused. Talking to them on Monday, they realize the task that's at hand. They realize the cards that they currently hold at the moment. And, you know, they realize first and foremost that whoever wins that Arkansas-Florida game, LSU's going to get a team that played them very well this year, that beat them this year. Yep. The only two teams in the conference
That's
that
right.
beat them. So if you look at the four games yep. between Arkansas and Florida, LSU went to overtime three times and lost one of them by one in regulation at home. So we got a tough game, and I think that has kind of got them focused. And you know, good leadership from Skylar Mays and Tremont Waters has them, I think, in a good place as a team mentally, as good of a place as you could be going into this tournament.
Kind of circle the wagons, right? Because they're going to go into this thing, I don't think there's any question or doubt, as public enemy number one in this tournament. I think everybody wants to see LSU lose and go away because of the cloud that's hovering over the program. Would that be a safe assessment?
It might be. You know, Skylar Mays was asked about that yesterday, and I just thought it was funny hearing someone ask Skylar Mays, of all people, what's it going to be like to be the bad boy of college basketball? You're looking at Skylar Mays, who might be the best the representative of what college yes. basketball is all about. So I don't yes. think that's going to bother them, if it's the case. You know, I could see it going the other way, too. I could see people kind of rallying behind LSU. And it just kind of depends on your perspective on how you approach different things. They are a bit of underdogs, not the right word, but there's some rooting angles that you could take too if you're an outsider looking in. And I'm sure LSU fans will certainly rally around the team and hope that they go out there and just win basketball games. So, yeah, some of that may come into effect. But...
Cody Worsham, kind enough to join us. You did a your podcast, Boot Up. I'm curious, how fun was it talking to the managers, the unsung heroes that do everything and kind of go unrecognized? But I'm thankful that you did that report on them.
Yeah, if you ever get a chance to talk to some managers of a basketball team, it's don't pass it up. They have some stories. The most fun part about the conversation was when the microphones were off and we're just kind of, you know, swapping stories and hearing some of their stories. And they've got so many good stories of just behind-the-scenes stuff that you don't think of that comes into play for them, and how they kind of have to be resourceful and adapt on the fly. And those guys grind. I mean, they're usually the first ones there. They're usually the last ones to leave. And I don't mean that in the cliche sense. I mean that in the literal sense. They set everything up and tear everything down. So, you know, I thought it was interesting. One of the managers, Corey Vincent, who was a college basketball player for a couple years at UNO, we actually had to push back the recording of the podcast because when we were about to record, Skyler May sent him a text and said, "Hey, I need to get a workout in. Can you come help me?" And even though it was LSU's off day, and of course Corey said, "Yeah, I'll come help you." So it's a tough life. It's a tough job, but it's a rewarding job. And I think on the podcast, they both tell some really interesting stories, and they also kind of give you an insight to the work they put in, but also the reward they get out of it.
Yeah, it's they're a part of the team, and they're a valuable resource in the team, and they're as excited when their team wins as the players are that are actually on the court doing it. So, yeah, that'll be must listen to the Boot Up podcast. We've talked enough about basketball. We'll see what happens there with the whole thing. I just wish the players the very, very best of luck. Javonte Smart is with the team. He's been practicing with the team. LSU's come out and said they may have a decision as soon as today, hopefully by Friday before tip, and if that's the case, he'll be good to go. And for his sake, I hope that is the case. But I want to switch gears and talk about football and what a difference a year makes for one Joe Burrow, who was coming in at this time a year ago just trying to figure out his lay of the land and trying to get to know people. What do you see different in Joe Burrow here and now as compared to a year ago?
Yeah, so let me use a personal analogy. I started at LSU the week before football season started, and so I kind of got dropped in, and you're trying to meet people, and you're trying to figure out who you're going to be working with a lot and develop relationships, develop trust, and sort out dynamics. And it took me a few weeks to kind of get my feet under me. Now put that on Joe Burrow, who came in the summer of last year, and you know he's got to do all that same stuff, but he's also got to learn a playbook and navigate – you know, 110 teammates and get ready to play against Miami in September. You know, he certainly had his hands full. So I think the approach that Joe took last year was the right approach. You just put your head down and you work hard. And when people see you doing that, they respect you. Once you're in their respect, you can kind of develop relationships from there. This year, he's got that respect already. He's earned it. He earned it with his work. He earned it with his play, with the toughness he showed last year, with the way he improved, with the way he led the team. So now it's about stepping out and being a vocal leader, and not just being a vocal leader, being the kind of the face of the program, which you know he sort of was at times last year. But you had Devin White, and you had Greedy Williams, and you know you had Nick Brissett. You had guys there that had established some credibility with the fan base. Now it's Joe. You know the offense is actually going to be a huge part of this team because of what they bring back at quarterback and in the passing game with the receivers. So he's got to develop all of those skill sets now, and I think he's ready for it. I think he's got absolutely the right kind of mentality. He's a football coach's son. He just seems like a natural fit there, and I expect big things from him this year. I think he's going to be a really, really good quarterback for LSU this year.
I wonder if he's willing to change jersey numbers and maybe put that number 18 on, because the guy that started that whole thing was a quarterback. Haven't had one since that I can recall, but maybe Joe Burrow might be the new number 18. He certainly seemed to fit the bill to me.
Yeah, he's got all the qualities. You know, I know a lot of times they've given it to guys who have been, you know, Tigers for 4 or 5 years and have been around for a while, but even though he's only been here for a year, he certainly displays the leadership qualities that you would expect out of an 18. So I would assume that he's a candidate for that. It would be cool to see a quarterback back with it after, you know, Matt Malt wore it back in the day and hadn't been back to that position since. It would be cool to see that number there, but I think he's making steps toward that. He definitely emerges as a leader with this team. The guys all respect him, and that's exactly what you want from your quarterback.
Cody Worsham, LSU Digital Media Director, kind enough to join us. Joe seems to be the popular name. Joe Brady's come along implementing some of the things that the New Orleans Saints and Drew Brees have done in his last 2 years as an offensive assistant there. What does Joe Burrow have to say about the offense to date?
I think the most revealing thing that Burrow has said about Joe Brady and the offense and how some of the things have changed is he said a couple times now that LSU's offense is competing a lot better against LSU's defense. You can imagine last year that against, you know, Greedy Williams and Devin White and some of the guys LSU had on defense, that offense took a while to really get competitive and practice situations with the defense. I think they're a little bit ahead of schedule now, and I think you've seen Joe Burrow say that a couple times. You've seen Ed Orgeron say it. I think the RPOs that they've started installing really suit Joe Burrow's game. I think he's really smart. I think he reads the game well. I think he can run and throw as well. He can read whether to hand it off or pull it and make a throw. And it's a necessity. You have to have that as part of your offense in the modern game of college football. You have to have that run-pass option to keep defenses honest, because all the best teams in the country do it. All the best offenses in the country do it. And if you don't have it, you're missing a really, really useful weapon. So we'll see how it looks once, we'll see a little bit in the spring game, I'm sure, and then certainly in the fall. But nothing but praise for it so far from Joe Burrow.
Finished 10th in the league in offense, total offense last season. So hopefully that will jettison upward. I'm curious, have you had a chance to talk to the bigger, stronger Miles Brennan? Here's a kid that has bucking the current system of athletics where, you know what, I'm going to honor my commitment. Yeah, I could have transferred, but no, I'm not. I want to be here, and my time will come. I love that.
Yeah, we talked to Miles yesterday. I've got a story on that coming out soon. I love it, too. I love the approach, because if you really look at Miles Brennan, Joe Burrow, this is his last year, and Miles Brennan could be a junior next season with basically 2 years to be the quarterback. So essentially he could follow the same exact career path that Joe Burrow did without having to transfer. Joe Burrow sat for 3 years, and now he's going to get two years as the quarterback for LSU. Miles Brennan could do the same exact thing, and he could finish his time at LSU as a very productive quarterback and set himself up for the future. And he's also a guy that needed time to develop physically. He is heavier. I saw him yesterday. He you can tell. I mean, he's not just saying that he's up. I think he's up to like 207 or something like that. He's not just saying it. You can tell his arms are bigger. His core is thicker. He's still tall and skinny, but he ain't as tall. He still is tall, but he ain't as skinny. And I just love his approach. I love his mentality. Ed Orgeron called him the MVP of the fourth quarter program. He said a light bulb just kind of went on for him. Miles did that. Hey, look, you've got to start developing your leadership skills. You have to start leading by example, kind of like Joe Burrow. And it sounds like Miles Brennan kind of put his head down and worked really, really hard during the spring and started earning the respect of his teammates. And so now he not only positions himself well to back up Joe Burrow, maybe push Joe Burrow for some reps, but then the next year to not all of a sudden be like, oh, it's my turn. I'm the quarterback now. What do I do? He's kind of starting that preparation process now, which is exciting and kind of makes you as comfortable as you can be with the LSU quarterback situation moving forward, which, look, you know as well as I do in years past, it's not always been a position of comfort where LSU can be confident in what they've got, not just for now, but in the future. But they seem to have some certainty there, and Miles just being faithful and committed and hardworking, I think, is a huge part of that.
Cody Worsham, LSU Digital Media Director. I feel so old, Cody. 39 years ago, the only time that LSU basketball has ever won an SEC tournament, and I was fortunate enough to be on that team, but 39 years ago, I really believe LSU, if they stay close together in Nashville, they've got a shot to win this thing as the number one seed. That means they play either Tennessee or Kentucky, but not both if things go according to the seeding. I just like their chances. If they can stay together, it's not easy, but they certainly have all the talent in the world to get it done.
The biggest thing, Jordy, is going to be how they handle adversity on the court, because we just haven't seen it yet in the context they're in. They blew the doors off Vanderbilt. That wasn't a very good Vanderbilt team. It's going to be interesting to see if they fall behind by 5, if they fall behind by 10. Can they rally? Can they steady the ship? And can they make the comebacks like they have all year? That's been their calling card. They fall behind by, you know, 5 to 10 points, but then they level and steady the ship, and then they come roaring back. That's going to be the test for me. And so I think it's going to happen in that first game. I think in that first game they're going to face some adversity, whether they fall behind or maybe they build a lead and then one of the teams comes back. At some point, someone's going to make a run at them. And I'll be interested to see how they handle that, how they respond, how they resist, and how they react moving forward. That's going to be the biggest test for this team. If they can do that, they'll be cutting down the nets at the end of the week, and we'll finally get Kent Lowe cutting down nets in an SEC tournament. How about that?
That would be, yeah, Kent wasn't around 39 years ago. That was in Birmingham when LSU beat Kentucky by 2 to offset Kentucky beating LSU in the regular season finale in Baton Rouge in overtime to win the SEC regular season championship. So we'll see. And I'm really curious to see Tremont Waters, because it looks like Coach Benford's handed him the keys and said, look, dude, I need your help. Go make plays. I just want to see this kid do his thing. There's nothing like tournament basketball. You get on a roll and you just make plays, man. There's no time to study, and you just play basketball, eat, sleep, play basketball, eat, sleep, play basketball for as long as you can. And I'm really anxious to see how this kid handles and orchestrates this team. That's what I'm fascinated to watch.
Well, he's got Kemba Walker-type qualities to where he could be a tournament sensation, where the biggest thing in tournament basketball is to have that guy who can consistently create, whether it's his own shot or for others. And Tremont, it doesn't matter if he's got 10 days of rest or 10 hours of rest. He could beat you off the dribble and create. So hopefully he gets electric and does what he does. There's nothing more fun than watching him go one-on-one. Hopefully he just gets hot and puts the team on his shoulders, and we see the start of a really fun ride for this team.
All starts Friday at noon, and we'll all be watching. Cody, thanks, man. I know you got a lot on your plate with football and basketball and baseball, and beach volleyball starts on Friday. I mean, they open up the new complex. It never, ever slows down over there, man. Never.
The sun never sets on the British Empire, and the sun never sets on the LSU Athletics Empire either. So we stay busy, but that's why we love
Let's hope
do.
It never does. Yeah, let's hope it never does. Thank you, Cody. Have a good one, buddy. We greatly appreciate it. And we'll be back to wrap up hour number one here on the Jordy Helfrich Show. 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com.
There's only one place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Helfrich Show on 103.7 The Game.
All right, welcome back. 53 minutes after the hour. Again, the lead story today, suspended LSU coach Will Wade's attorney has notified university officials that his client, Will Wade, won't sit down to discuss his relationship with convicted middleman Christian Dawkins until after the federal government concludes its investigation into college basketball corruption. The letter sent to LSU Chancellor F. King Alexander, Athletic Director Joe Oliva, and others, Wade's attorney, Michael G. McGovern in New York, wrote, quote, upon conclusion of the pending criminal investigation, Coach Wade will be happy to meet with you and LSU's Board of Supervisors and to answer any and all questions you may have. Doesn't sound like the man wants to coach at LSU. If he did, he would meet with them and talk to them here and now. But he doesn't want to incriminate himself in any way, shape, or form. This is not good in any way, shape, or form. And again, it just appears to me that his days are done at LSU. If they weren't, Why wouldn't he meet with LSU and tell them, guys, this is what I meant when I said this. This is what I meant when I said that. And no money ever was exchanged between me, LSU, Javonte Smart, or any other player. Why wouldn't he just come out and say it? Why wouldn't he and his representation meet with LSU, their representation, and the NCAA and get it out here and now? That would be the only way he'd be allowed to coach. Come on, guys. I mean, this is not that difficult to understand. Unless I am completely blind and deaf and dumb. And I don't think I'm any of the above. I just don't see any happy ending here if you are a Will Wade supporter of LSU basketball. I just don't see it. Why are they waiting? And someone can explain to me. And we're going to try and get Scott Rapp on, who the Advocate broke this story. Joe Oliva talked to the Advocate today while he was up in Nashville getting ready for the SEC basketball tournament, of which LSU is the number one seed. They'll play Friday at noon. We'll have the game right here on 103.7 The Game. Pre-game show, 11:30. Call the game at noon. We'll do the post-game show, and then we'll come on board and hopefully talk about an LSU win over either Arkansas or Florida. And that's what I'm hoping. Be a great start to a Friday show and a great weekend. But is his unwillingness, Will Wade's unwillingness to discuss what he said to Dawkins in telephone calls that were intercepted by FBI wiretaps, it means he's not going to coach in this weekend's SEC tournament or any of LSU's games in the upcoming NCAA tournament. So you can just forget about that. And quick, you know, this protest, 3 or 4 people. I think people know what's going to happen. They just do. And we'll talk more about it. Busy second hour coming your way. The Jordy Helfert Show. 103.7 The Game. 1037thegame.com. Just makes me sick. Really does.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pull off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station. 1037 The Game.
Touchdown,
streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
Oh, it's hour number 2 of 2. I know it's March 13th, but really it's January 1st, 2019, if you're the NFL. We welcome you to the 2019 season, which officially began today. Yes, it officially began today. Lots of wheeling and dealing going on in the National Football League. Our sincerest condolences, however, go to Coach Paul Menary and his family after the passing of his father, coaching legend Demi Menary, this morning in Baton Rouge. Coach, we love you, and this is never a good time, but our sincerest prayers and best wishes to you and everyone in your family on the passing of your father, who was 90 years young and a college baseball Hall of Famer. With that in mind, we go around the sports water cooler every day at this time of day to see what's hot in the world of sports. CD, button, please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
College basketball tournaments all over the place in the ACC as we speak. Virginia Tech with a 62 43 lead over Miami with 7 minutes and some change left in that one. So Buzz Williams, who has been reported as the primary target for the head coaching position at Texas A&M, their coach is he's done as soon as they lose their last game this season. So A&M will be looking for a new coach, and Buzz Williams is their primary target. CD, good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, Jordy. My goodness, happy new NFL year. It just got started. The ball dropped about 5 minutes ago, and my goodness, we have a lot to talk about. Obviously, last night, the biggest one of them all, I feel like, dropped, and that is Odell Beckham Jr., Jarvis Landry, wide receiver, you back together in Cleveland. And it just, you have to think that this is a team that may have put themselves in contention to not just win the AFC North, but the entire AFC, Jordy. This is a team that is phenomenally set up right now.
They even have their former wide receiver coach from LSU, who's the wide receiver coach of the Cleveland Browns. The only thing missing is you got a different M throwing it to him. No Mettenberger. Baker Mayfield throwing it to him. So they are the flavor of the month. Everybody's excited about the Cleveland Browns, and we'll see how they handle all of this. So for a first-year head coach, Freddie Kitchens, who used to be quarterback at Alabama, was on the LSU staff for a year with Nick Saban was here. We'll see how he can handle all of these personalities that are now in Cleveland. And I heard where Odell Beckham Jr. asked LeBron James if he could borrow his mansion in Akron. How about that?
That would be amazing, Jordy. And like I said, this is just ridiculous. The wealth of talent that Freddie Kitchens, the first-year head coach, as you put it, the dude has a lot of tools he's going to be working with in that kitchen all season long, especially on the offensive side of the ball. You got David Njoku, Jarvis Landry, Odell Beckham, Kareem Hunt, Nick Chubb. It's just ridiculous how much they have right now. Can't anybody stop that offense?
It's going to be fun to watch, right? Going to be fun to watch.
I think that's the first time I've ever heard you say Cleveland Browns and fun to watch. Or Betty, I think that's the first time I've heard anybody say that.
I'm with you. Absolutely.
Meanwhile, we got to
see OBJ's. I can see that big poster of OBJ on that huge wall that used to house LeBron James's visual. So let's do it.
That's just huge. And then we got to look over the other side of it, because the New York Giants, I feel like they may have screwed this up severely for them, because they got Jabril Peppers and some mid-round picks. I'm sorry, Jordy. Mid-round picks aren't what's going to get it done for the New York Giants and try and get back to relevancy, especially now that Eli Manning, I don't think he has anybody to throw to anymore. So it's just like you've got Saquon Barkley. It's an absolute mess right now with the New York Giants, further proving that maybe Dave Gettleman should be the one out the door.
We didn't re-sign him to trade him, right? We didn't extend him to trade him. That's what he said about Odell Beckham Jr. many times. Just go turn back the clock to 1985 and see how football was played in the league then. That's what the Giants are going to do now. And if I'm Saquon Barkley, I am taking out an insurance policy at Lloyd's of London, because they're going to wear his derriere out.
Exactly. They're going to wear him out, because, like I said, it's all you can really do right now is run the ball. And Saquon Barkley is a great running back, but he's not going to make an entire team. It's damn near possible to do that. Ask the Jacksonville Jaguars how that went last year, just using Leonard Fournette for the most part when Blake Bortles was absolutely awful. Yeah. And now they kind of got a good quarterback for a change when you look at the Jacksonville Jaguars. But another big shoe dropped last night, Jordy. And without a doubt, it's the Le'Veon Bell deal, signing with the New York Jets, close to $61 million total. Just some amazing stuff. Did the Jets get it right here? Because this seems like an interesting choice.
I think so. I think with the young quarterback they have there, Bell's ability to run it, Bell's ability to catch it out of the backfield, that's going to help Sam Darnold a heck of a lot. And the Jets need some star power, man. They need something. So I think they got it right. I do. They will be the toast of the town while the Giants just fade into Dullsville obscurity.
Yep, exactly, man. The Pittsburgh Steelers, it's a weird place right now in the NFL. The Pittsburgh Steelers are about to go into obscurity, into the pit of misery, while the Cleveland Browns are the talk of the town, it's just it's a weird place in the NFL right now. But I feel like the Saints, they're the ones with clearer heads, if you will, because they haven't made too many moves. Obviously, the Latavius Murray signing, we talked about it yesterday. But they wound up re-signing Will Lutz to a five-year deal, Jordy.
Yep.
I think that may have been the smartest thing they could have done because after years of not necessarily having a consistency at the kicker position, now you do, especially for the long term. The former Georgia State Panther has definitely lived up, exceeded expectations that we had when he joined the team as an undrafted free agent.
Solid, solid special teams with those two, and it's such an important aspect of the game. You know, Morton Anderson, Hall of Famer, came to the Saints his first few years by the 78% accuracy in kicking. Will Lutz, same time frame, 87%. The Saints took a potluck flyer on the kid, gave him a chance. He's delivered, and now the Saints have delivered to him. So they're set with their punter and their kicker, maybe more so than any other team in the league.
Exactly. And now, looks like the Saints deal with Teddy Bridgewater. It might not be official just yet. This is coming from Diana Rossini of the Four Letter Network that it's not official just yet. The Saints feel like they'll get it done, but the Miami Dolphins are getting heavily involved, trying to land him, getting back home. Which way do you think this one winds up going, Jordy? Because it feels like Miami Dolphins, they know that they can't rely on Tannehill forever, and they need a guy like Bridgewater to get them back into some form of relevancy outside of when they beat the Patriots in Miami. It just feels like right now it's going to be tough to keep him.
I don't know where it's going to go. I don't know what their draft status is. Do they have enough things to move up in the draft to get a quarterback? I don't pretend to know what Miami's thinking. It seems like they would behoove themselves to just tank the year and then go get the quarterback from Clemson when he's draft eligible. And I think some teams are going to do that. I really do.
All right, last one, Jordy. Looking over at Major League Baseball, we talked a lot of free agency. But, hey, this is something really cool. MLB is finally doing something I feel like they should have done a long time ago, and that's getting rid of all those trade deadlines that they have after the original trade deadline towards the end of July and beginning of August. Is this the smartest thing MLB has done in a good minute?
Yes. I like that. I think the players ought to be able to collude with one another. Teams should not, but players should have the right to openly say, hey, dude, come play with us. I think that's fun. I think that's good. Yes. I like the move. And let the players talk amongst themselves. How about that? All right. Job well done, my friend. Hot Topics is always brought to you by Cajun Chef, the best hot sauce I've ever had. That's because I'm partial to it because it's homegrown. It's right there in St. Martinville. And the BR family's been doing it for nearly 9 decades, nearly 90 years of excellence. 90 years. Finest spices, finest peppers, secret ingredients. Boom. Best hot sauce ever. Bring a small bottle of Cajun Chef hot sauce with you wherever you go, because I promise you, everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it. The very latest on Will Wade. Scott Rabelais of The Advocate will join us next here on The Jordy Helfrich Show. And we began the show talking about the story that The Advocate broke today as Joe Oliva and others in Nashville had a phone conversation with The Advocate in which the Will Wade, Javonte Smart situation was explained on their part. And Scott Rabelais has written about it, just got hot off the press, man, hot off the press. And he was kind enough to come on board with us in the here and now. Scott, a busy day, buddy. How are you?
I'm taking a breath right now, Jordy. it's good to talk with you.
Okay. Here's what I get out of this, and you tell me if I'm wrong. Seems like LSU wants to keep Will Wade as his coach, and they want to reinstate him as quickly as possible. If Will Wade would come in and talk to them and explain his side of the story, but Will Wade, according to his attorney, is not going to do so until this whole investigation comes to a close, and that's not going to happen anytime sooner than April 22nd when he gets subpoenaed and has to testify. Is that the gist of this?
That definitely seems to be the case. I do think they want to keep him. I mean, Oliva said that plainly. He said, I would love for him to be our coach, but he said it's got to be – he's got to be cleared, and so he's got to come talk to them and clear his name. And this is – April 22nd is just the beginning, though. I mean, this could – our news writer, Brent Stoll, who's writing the main story for Page One, is – so, the legal process moves very slowly, and this could drag on until May or June.
Obviously, the reports are out that Javonte Smart could be reinstated today, tomorrow, maybe Friday, because he has spoken to LSU. What? I don't understand. If Will Wade wants to coach this team and believes he did nothing wrong, why is he being advised not to speak to LSU, in your opinion?
Yeah, first of all, on Javonte, the difference is, he and his mother have cooperated with LSU and met with them and NCAA officials who've been participating in this process. And I think he will be reinstated sometime before they tip on Friday against in Nashville.
Okay.
Why is Will Wade not? As Tom Skinner, LSU's lead attorney, said, Will Wade's got bigger problems than LSU. You know, I mean, this is a big time. He has hired a criminal defense attorney out of New York. The guy's name's on the story. I think it's Michael McGovern. This is a big time deal, and I think he just doesn't want to take a chance on telling one story in court and one story to LSU and possibly incriminating himself. That's the gist. That's my take on it. It's certainly problematic for him, and returning as LSU's coach is just, I've thought all along there was a possibility that he could be back the postseason, but right now, after hearing all this, unless he has a change of heart and decides to come in from the cold, I don't think that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, if he's not going to talk, what could LSU do? Why LSU speaking here? Why speaking now, in your opinion?
You know, I think obviously they've gotten a lot of criticism nationally, saying people that you should fire Wade and not go to the NCAA tournament. If I may, as an aside, one of the last stories we're working on, Sheldon Nichols is writing now. I asked Joe Oliva directly in our teleconference, have you or would you consider not participating in the NCAA tournament? And he said, absolutely not. They're going to play. And I asked him, he used to be on the selection committee. I said, do you think if Wade's not coaching, would it impact your seeding in the tournament? And he said, well, it shouldn't. They're supposed to judge the team on the court, but these are individuals, and we'll see. But then after that, there was a teleconference with the chairman of the selection committee, and he said basically the same thing. We're going to judge LSU, through this weekend and see where they should be seated. So that's the main thing. And then your original question, I'm sorry, I got off on a tangent.
That's okay. I mean, I was listening so intent, I forgot what I asked you, to be quite honest with you. But I recall a former LSU basketball coach saying his team would not play in a tournament, and that backfired significantly. So I knew that LSU would play in this one. But, there comes a point in time. How much patience does LSU have with Will Witt? I mean, I know they like him. I know he's proven himself to be a very good coach, but there's no one person above and beyond the program. And, how much patience is LSU going to have with him if he doesn't come forward and start to speak?
Well, like I said, Oliva said we would love for him to be our coach, but I think there is a limit. Tom Skinner, the attorney, said this is a day by day situation with Coach Wade, but I don't think there's while he's on an indefinite suspension, there is no indefinite length of time that LSU is willing to wait. I mean, at some point, recruiting will get impacted and that sort of thing. I think LSU, I think it's kind of what you're asking me for. LSU's, doing, why are they coming forward? I think it's they've gotten so much criticism from fans and from the national media. And then, but they want to show the NCAA if the NCAA does come down on them and they can use the information from this federal case to potentially put LSU on probation. Excuse me. And they want to show that they've exhibited institutional control, that they've told Coach Wade what they expect of him from an ethical standpoint, and that they're doing what they can. And if they feel, as Ross Dellinger said in a story on SI.com, that they felt a little blindsided by this most recent development, they can say that and maybe lighten the school's penalty if there's a penalty that comes to pass. So I think that's what we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, I believe that they had a conversation with Will earlier and asked him. I'm just guessing. I believe they would have to. Will, is there anything else going to pop up here in the future? And I'm sure Will Wade, like anybody right. else would say in that position, no, nothing's, everything's good. So that in right. tune conveys along with what Ross said about blindsidedness.
Yeah, I mean, this has been simmering since October. He had to address some other things that came up about recruiting improprieties at SEC Basketball Media Day. And talking about Christian Dawkins, who's the guy he's reportedly mm-hmm. talking to on the wiretap. And he said, no, I've never had any business dealings with Christian Dawkins. And he's never talked to him, of course. But, he left himself an out there. But, yeah, I mean, this has been simmering for a while, and now it's kind of exploded. And so LSU went to him back then and said, I assume they said, well, is there anything else, as you said? And so they've been trying to go forward in maybe hopeful faith, but good faith that was the case. And now they've had to deal with this other situation. And I know people are angry with Oliva and the administration, but most of us have bosses. And if our boss said we have to come and talk to you about a serious matter, you got to go talk to them or expect to face the consequences.
Yes.
And he could have been fired by the letter of his contract. He could have been fired for insubordination for not coming out. But Skinner brought that
Absolutely.
Up also today. So they don't want to. They don't want to fire him out of hand. They clearly have shown that, but their patience is not going to last forever.
But he called their bluff, and they got to do something, or else now who's running the office, right? And so you got to do something. Right. But the other question, and I haven't had a chance to read the entire article because our show started. But I briefly saw something about a mention of two other people that were involved and that were willing to talk to LSU. What can you explain that?
I guess these would be, potential handlers for players, like smart go-betweens, that sort of thing. They did not tell us those names, even off the record, but they're people that have, they said have been willing to talk to them. And just again, not to say specifically what they said in our meeting, because some things are on the record and some things are off, but I get the impression they're hearing what they want, what they hope to hear from Javonte Smart in terms of reinstating him. And people should remember Javonte has not been suspended; they just withheld him from play.
Right.
Was suspended. Javonte was just withheld, and there is a difference. And I think that investigation into the Smart part of it is proceeding in a way that they can feel good about putting him back on the court. In these postseason tournaments, but it's going to be in the postseason under Tony Benford as the interim coach, I would think, Jordy, unless you decide you want to come back and help coach.
I'm ready. Heck, I am ready. And I'll guide them. I'll do it the right way. And I'll give you first dibs on any interview. How about that?
Very good.
All right, Scott. Well, thanks for clearing things up. It just seems to me that Will Wade's not going to be coaching basketball for this LSU basketball team for the rest of this season. And beyond that, I will reserve judgment. But if I'm betting, I'm betting no more. But we'll see. We'll see. I hope for the best, but we will see what happens. But thank you for coming on a very busy day. Go get some rest. I know you're heading to Nashville, so safe travels, and we'll look for updates from you on The Advocate. So thank you, Scott.
Thanks, and I hope people pick up a copy of the Acadiana Advocate tomorrow and give us a read on what we have in the paper. Thank you, Jordy.
There you go. All right, buddy. Always, as always, thank you very much. So there you have it. LSU wants him as the head coach, but with his attorney saying, yeah, we'll talk to you after this investigation is complete. He's done. Not coaching this year. I don't think he's ever coaching again. Michael Hugenin next. The Jordy Helpert Show. 103.7 The Game.
Never play cards. yards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
Uh-oh. Guess what day it is. Guess what day it is.
It's time to break down the biggest storylines this week with Michael Huguenin of The Athletic. What's up, Michael?
Mike. What day is it, Mike? Hump day!
All right, we need some help here. College, college athletics, colleges, period, are upside down, topsy-turvy. We've got desperate housewives and Uncle Becky involved, Aunt Becky, rather, involved in getting their children into top-flight schools. It's craziness. Michael Huguenin will bring some sense to it, because I can't. I can't figure it all out. It's the most bizarre things, and I guess my question is, what's next? But, Michael, good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
Doing well, and I would argue that it's not necessarily a college athletics scandal, but
right.
a college admissions scandal.
Yes.
In which they just use some lesser sports in an effort, you know, like crew mm-hmm. and tennis, and I think there was one or two, maybe even golf, to get their kids into the schools
under
that the parents,
under the radar,
right, and into schools that the parents thought that their kids needed to go to, and that's the thing that's the most sort of ridiculous. I don't want to go into any kind of class or rant here, but if you're evidently there was one parent who paid $6 million worth of bribes. My argument would be, you know something. If you are a family that has $6 million laying around to bribe someone, your kid's going to be fine even if he never goes to college.
Yes.
So, it's interesting. There was an assistant athletic director at USC who was fired. There's the guy who was in charge of test preparations or something.
Yep.
He had some kind of weird title at IMG Academy has been fired.
Yep.
So there is an athletics edge to this whole thing, but for the most part, it's just, I'll be honest, it's rich people finding a way to get their kids into schools they couldn't qualify for.
And it's a handler that realizes that the crew coach or the tennis coach doesn't make nearly the amount of money that a football, basketball, baseball coach does. And so they were kind of vulturing on them and offering them this opportunity to make $400,000, $250,000.
Yeah.
Just turn your eye and put them out on as a scholarship. Nobody's going to know anything.
Right.
It's just mind-boggling.
It is. It's an incredible story, and I look forward to reading more journalism about it. There's going to be books, and there's going to be a movie. Heck, you got two entertainment stars associated with this. And I read
yes.
something that, not necessarily did some of these coaches profit personally, but their programs may have. In other words, if you're paying the tennis coach a $400,000 bribe, evidently at least one coach put that into his program. And maybe he did that to sort of feel less guilty. But, you had people saying, well, he's – The part that I thought was funniest was, funny in a weird way, my kid's a quote-unquote recruited crew athlete. Oh, by the way, here's a photo of him that you can Photoshop
yes.
into a
yes.
photo of somebody who actually is rowing.
That's,
to show,
that's amazing.
The whole thing's ridiculous. And I guess there was one student that attended Georgetown who claimed that she played 20 hours of tennis a week. And I'm thinking, if you think about it, that means she basically went to class, played tennis, went home, went to bed, woke up, went to class, played tennis. It's ridiculous. And evidently, she was one of the very few, if not the only, kid who fully knew what was going on. She evidently reveled in the fact that she got in by illegal means. And that's what this was. These people illegally got their kids into elite private schools because people had their hand out and let them get in.
It's amazing. If you got that much money, you call up the school.
And you donate, right.
You donate and the kid
I'll
gets in.
I'll donate a wing. And
yes.
the $6 million one, if I'm the kid, and I find this out now, I'm like, hey, mom and dad, give me the $6 million personally, and I'll never mess with you guys again.
That's right. I don't want to go to school when I got $6 million in the pocket. Oh, my God. Michael Hugan, The Athletic, I've got to ask your opinion. This LSU basketball scenario, it's just come out now that in talking to the Baton Rouge advocate, Joe Oliva, in Nashville for the SEC basketball tournament on a teleconference call, said that Will Wade's attorney told LSU in a Tuesday evening letter that the coach would talk about allegations once the wide-ranging federal investigation in college basketball corruption concludes. He did not want to take a meeting earlier. Therefore, LSU said he violated his contract and they suspended him. What is your take on all of this?
Well, LSU certainly did things differently than Arizona. And I'll be honest, I'm not there in Baton Rouge. But my presumption is, if you're an LSU fan who's irritated by what the school did to Will Wade, if the exact same thing had happened at Kentucky, if there was a recording of John Calipari saying the exact same things Will Wade did, my presumption is every LSU fan would say, what is Kentucky waiting for? You got to suspend John Calipari, because there's no way to spin that in a positive manner. But, yeah, you know, this has been ongoing for, heck, 18 months now, and you and I have been talking about this for a decade. College basketball recruiting is in the sewer, and you have to be extremely naive to think that this kind of stuff hasn't been going on for a long time. The difference in Will Wade's case and evidently in Sean Miller's case, they are actually on tape saying things that basically say, hey, yeah, we paid for this guy. So, well, hard to spin that in a positive manner.
Let me ask you this. Why is Arizona taking the approach that they're taking?
That's a good question.
Because I can tell you what LSU's doing.
Arizona is saying, we're gonna keep Sean Miller as our coach till the bitter end. And maybe by miracle of miracles, nothing's going to happen. But at the same time, I don't know. If you're a high school basketball recruit now, why would you even entertain the notion of going to Arizona? They're under investigation. LSU's under investigation. At least LSU has made moves to sort of let's see what happens. Will Wade, you're suspended when you're not coaching the team. You know, go away for a while. Whereas Arizona, and there's a lot of coaches out there involved. You know, and I've talked about this for 18 months too. It's ridiculous to assume that assistant coaches, including two last week who were sentenced to jail time, that the head coaches didn't know what was going on at those schools. There's plausible deniability, and then there's outright lying. And I think in this case, it's outright lying in a lot of cases. LSU's still the number one seed in the SEC tournament, still has a chance to be a number one seed in the NCAA tournament. Certainly, I would think they're going to be a top two seed at the least, barring a loss to Florida or Arkansas in the second round. Maybe then there are three, big deal. They're going to be a top four seed. The season's going on. They can still go a long way. And interim coaches have won national titles before. Steve Fisher at Michigan.
Steve
they
Fisher.
Fired Bill Frieder, I think 3 or 4 days before the NCAA tournament started in 1989,
that's
and Michigan
exactly
went on
right.
to win the national title because they had a really good team. LSU has a really good team. So the distraction aspect is there. At the same time, it might serve as a galvanizing force for the players. It's obviously that's the black cloud over this NCAA tournament because a lot of power schools are involved. I've said this on your show 100 times. Every school cheats. There's 353 Division I-A schools. Everyone breaks the rules. I think the difference is there's blatant cheating and there's obfuscation of the rules, and there's some gray area. Some schools reside in the gray area. Some schools step over by accident. But but the defense that, well, everybody does this, that's not a defense because I've gotten stopped for speeding tickets 20 times, and I've told the cop all 20 times, dude, that guy's going 10 times faster than I am. Why don't you stop him? And they just basically laugh at you.
Yeah. Michael Hugan, The Athletic. Will Wade made the cardinal sin of a coach, and I don't understand, for a guy as smart as he is or appears to be, why he would ever talk to someone directly
to make an offer. That's what assistant coaches are for.
That's what your friends of the program are for.
You're right. I'm laughing here, and I don't mean to make light of the situation, but that's exactly right. And, you know, there's people wondering, well, why doesn't Coach A get in trouble? Why doesn't Coach B get in trouble? Why doesn't Coach C get in trouble? You know their schools are breaking the rules. Well, there's got to be proof. And I think the one thing you and I have talked about also many times, the NCAA is not a legitimate investigative force. You can't go to Coach A and say, you need to tell me the truth, because Coach A is going to laugh and say, yeah, right, whatever. Whereas if it's a district attorney or an FBI agent, you lie, you're going to jail. Mm-hmm. So, and that's why I think the NCAA, frankly, they may not say it, but I think deep down there's NCAA officials who are extremely happy that this is going on with college basketball, because the sport is going to be cleaned up even a teeny bit. And, you know, it's not going to be totally scrub clean. That's impossible. But anything that can be done to sort of the level of the playing field here is a good thing. But, there's a heck of a lot of coaches right now who are probably sweating and remembering past phone calls and hoping against hope that, yeah, I hope nobody taped me. But you're right. I think most head coaches, they usually have an assistant coach do that kind of stuff, or another person in the basketball office.
Is the only way to clean this thing up is if you get caught?
You can't coach again.
You will never coach basketball again.
You know, again, I've said this before. You and I have talked about this before too. It's every college commissioner, conference commissioner, every college administrator, every college AD, heck, most college coaches decry NCAA rules breakers. And yet, all you got to do is look at the University of Houston basketball program. They're going to be a top four, top five seed. They have a coach who's been fired twice for breaking NCAA rules. Now, you can argue that, well, those rules really weren't that serious. Well, he got fired for it twice. So why does he have a job? Because winning trumps all, and that's why you take stuff that NCAA administrators say with a grain of salt, because they talk out of both sides of their mouth. We want to have teams that follow the rules and graduate players, but if you follow the rules and graduate players and go 5-26, you ain't keeping your job. Whereas if you go 26-5 and your kids don't graduate and there's all sorts of allegations of rules breaking but none can be proven, you never lose your job.
It just makes me sick to my stomach, and I can't watch them play anymore, Kansas, because I know they're cheating.
Yeah.
I mean, it is dead to right, and how that coach, Bill Self, is still on the sideline, it just makes me ill. I'm sorry,
right, and
it just does.
Yeah, I think a lot of folks are out there going, okay, Will Wade could lose his job, Sean Miller could lose his job, Bill Self's going to lose his job, there's going to be a couple more coaches who lose their jobs. And if a massive cheating scandal is what it takes for college basketball to get a teeny bit cleaner, well, so be it. Because and you can argue all you want. You know, college, the idea of amateurism is, I get it, it's not only long dead, it's 700 feet into the ground. You're never going to be able to dig it up again. That's gone. At the same time, I've always found, to me, it's, and I know football recruiting's bad, not as bad, but it's bad. The idea that, you know, you're an institution of higher learning. You're there to prepare kids, and they are kids, they're 17 and 21-year-old, to be an adult. And you've got coaches and administrators flouting the rules, breaking the rules, paying money. It's unseemly. And that's why I think that there's a lot of folks out there who say, if you're going to be doing all this kind of stuff, forget the whole quote-unquote amateurism stuff. It's time for the players to start getting paid, because over the table, you're paying them under the table, and maybe that's time to stop. And there was that court case that was resolved last week in California that's going to potentially change some things, because the NCAA was sued, it lost. Now they can appeal, which is going to drag this out for a while. But it is interesting that a couple leagues, I believe, released statements. The NCAA released a statement about it. But it's it, 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 the tide is turning, and I think within the next, frankly, 10 years, a lot of the stuff that was, oh, this is never going to happen, what they were saying, this is never going to happen in 2005, will be in place in 2025, and people are going to be going, why did it take so long to get to this spot?
Yeah. Michael Huguenin of The Athletic. Are you of the belief, because, you know, the Zion Williamson thing, it's on tape about what the dad wanted the kid to get from Kansas, and he ends up at Duke. I'm not saying that Duke did anything, but it sure looks like they could have. Are there certain programs like Alabama football, Duke, North Carolina basketball that are bigger and beyond NCAA rules and regulations?
No, I don't think so. I mean, Alabama football has been on probation, what, six times in my lifetime. North Carolina did get in trouble for basketball, though. The scandal, the academic scandal, was seen as a school problem, not an athletic department program. Duke has had some issues in the past. But you're right. I mean, it's almost like the Cam Newton situation in 2010. You know, he asked Mississippi State for $200,000. Well, he didn't end up there. So I think it's strange credulity to say, well, he didn't get $200,000 from Mississippi State, but he went to Auburn, and everything's on the up and up. And just like Zion Williamson, exactly right. I mean, if there's stuff out there with – it appears certainly that people surrounding Zion Williamson had their hand out, and I think it's a little bit naive to think that something wasn't put in that hand at some point.
All they had to do was wait a year, and they could have gotten as much as they wanted because he'd been in the NBA.
That's the thing. I think that's the whole idea about
– doesn't make sense.
This goes back to, why are you making these players go to college when they do not want to? So they shouldn't have to. I mean, if I leave high school, if I'm a 18-year-old high school senior who graduates, I can do whatever I want. And, again, it's athletes being held to a different standard. Now, do I think that, you know – baseball has that rule where if you go to college, you're there for 3 years. If you go to junior college, you're there for two. And I think that's sort of a general prevailing conventional wisdom, is that right out of high school, you're not ready to play major league ball if you sign up to college. But yet high school kids go straight to the minor leagues all the time. Football, I guess it's a little bit different, the physical aspect of it. But basketball, you can't tell me that Zion Williamson wouldn't be a 15-point-a-game scorer in the NBA right now.
Why does he have
to go to college? And I think that move is, we're going to swing back the other way and let these guys do what they want. And the whole one-and-done to me, I don't like one-and-dones. And the thing is, don't dislike the kid for the rule. Just like the NBA, because it was their rule. And I think the NBA is going to change
that, and I think college coaches
will be happy with that.
Meanwhile, it's championship week, so let the fun begin, right? And next week we'll know who's
already
in the NCAA tournament.
Last night, watch parts of all five. And we got spring football starting at a bunch of schools around the country and in the SEC. So Major League spring training. This is a good time to be a sports fan. Kyler Murray's pro day was today. He wouldn't get measured, but he did weigh in. He says, I'm not getting measured again. I'm measured in at 5'10".
I don't need to anymore.
And 1'8".
That's right.
I'm 5'10". I'm not going to measure in again. But I guess he's throwing right now, supposedly. So we'll see.
Well,
it'll be interesting to see if he does indeed go number one.
He is Michael Huguenin, The Athletic. You can follow him at Mike Huguenin on Twitter and so many other ways. A terrific job. And as always, we greatly appreciate your time, buddy. Have a great week.
I talk to you guys next week. Appreciate it.
All right. Michael Huguenin of The Athletic. Back to wrap things up here on the Jordy Helpert Show.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Helpert Show on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the app.
All right, we welcome you back. Finishing touches to this hump day edition of the Jordy Helpert Show. Let's go straight to our history lesson, because it was on this day, March 13th, the year 2004, for all you opera lovers, Luciano Pavarotti performed in his last opera at the New York Metropolitan Opera's performance of Tosca. Luciano Pavarotti on this day, March 13th, the year 2004. Not a big opera fan. Sorry, just not, but I know many of you are. All right, let's birthday time. If today, March the 13th, is your birthday, happy birthday from all of us to all of you. Hope you have a great, great day. You share it with the likes of happy 78th birthday to Chato. Yeah, Gucci Gucci girl, right? Chato. Not a very good day for him. William H. Macy is 69. His wife, Felicity Huffman, you know, pay for school. Yes, crazy. Happy 47th birthday to Common. Happy 28th birthday to Cleveland Cavalier Tristan Thompson, involved with the Kardashians. That's always a zoo. And happy 55th birthday to our good friend, New Orleanian, Mississippi State Bulldog, San Francisco Giant, Will the Thrill Clark. Boy, could he swing it left-handed style. Will the Thrill, happy birthday. If it's your anniversary, happy anniversary to you and to yours. Hope you keep adding year after year after year to it. Special thanks, Jeff Duncan on the Saints, Cody Worsham, LSU basketball, LSU football, and Michael Huguenin, all things collegiate. And boy, is it all screwed up. Admissions, sports, it's all, it's all crazy. It's all crazy. Tomorrow we will preview LSU basketball in the SEC tournament. We'll see if Javonte Smart has been reinstated. Only time will tell, but as of right here, right now, no news on that front. And it doesn't look like Will Wade is going to be coaching for a while. Till not this year. According to Joe Oliva, it doesn't sound like that. We'll update that as well. CD, job well done as always. Thanks to all of you for listening, to our partners that make it possible. You're the best. You are the best. And we always are looking for more. So come on, join the team. We have only one Wednesday, March 13th. Make it a great afternoon and evening. Come on back tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4, same great station, 103.7 The Game. Until then, I'm Jordy Helpert. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette, this is KLWB Karen Crow Lafayette, 103.7 The Game, a Delta Media station. Call Lafayette Roofing, 237-7663.
6 nights a week, there's just one television network that takes you on an epic journey through the final frontier, Heroes and Icons. Featuring each classic Star Trek series, back to back, we call it All Star Trek.
Sunday through Friday, starting at 7 p.m. on KBCG Channel 50.2, Cox 9, LUS 22, Charter 11, Allen 8, and Suddenlink 10.
There are over 5,000 songs on the radio that talk about home. But without realtors, there's a chance there wouldn't be any songs about home, or coming home, or take me home, or sweet home, or who says you can't go home. Luckily, there are over 1.3 million realtors who dedicate their lives to finding you the perfect place to sing home about. So count on members of the National Association of Realtors, one of the most trusted.